Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, and welcome to episode number 13, HJT Design Radio Straight Talk. Tonight's episode is What to Know Before You Start Up a Practice. And along with me is my co-host, Han. Good evening, Han.
Good evening, Jim. How are things going today?
Well, excellent. Actually, not too bad of a day up in here in Ohio. We haven't got any serious snow yet, but unlike you down in Florida, you don't have to worry about that.
It's a balmy 72 degrees. I'm suffering.
Yeah. We're lucky if we hit 35, but that's the way it is. And you know what? We cry when it's bad weather and we laugh when it's great weather. But obviously, we want to thank everyone for the patience in the last couple episodes that we missed because of the holidays. It was a little difficult for Han and I to get everything together to be able to create episodes. But we are anticipating having a show on the 11th and the 18th of this month, along with no shows on the 25th and the 1st, giving everybody an opportunity to enjoy the Christmas holiday along with the new year. And then our next show would then follow on the 8th of January. We've got some very exciting guests that we're going to hopefully line up for those three shows. And as well tonight, we've got a very interesting and exciting guest that is going to be calling in here in a little while to talk about her startup practice. But obviously, this is a live call-in show, so if you would like to have a question answered, please feel free. Call us on our number at 657-383-1442. We'll get you in, and if we don't know the answer to the question, we'll find a way to get that answer and get it out there to you. But feel free. And then obviously as well, you can get anything to us in regards to questions or emails through our website at www.hjtdesigngroup.com. So tonight's episode, we're going to do a couple things backwards. We're going to talk about what's happening on a dental town first, and then jump into our main topic, and then finish out with Dr. Sarah. So, Han, what's happened on Dental Town over the last couple of weeks since we haven't had any opportunity to have a show?
Here's a topic that I find worth discussing. Often we say, you know, the question to that's posed to us is, if I have seven operatory that I want to start, how much room, how much space do I need? Again, those are rules of thumb that we use to assist individual who is looking or hunting for a potential space for their practice. It is rule of thumb. Recently, there was a discussion. Again, the smaller the space, the more difficult it is to squeeze things in, and it's that rule of thumb need to be expanded or amended to make things work. We have a doctor that our servo actually is contemplating at a small, relatively small space, just around 1,000 square feet. 1,000 square feet depends on your specialties and how you practice. But if you apply the rule of thumb that we often use, whether it's 300, 350, 400 square feet per operatory, you may be disappointed, because even though the treatment room is the same, the remaining of the building, the clinical space, space that are required by code, like toilet rooms and general closet and things like that, as well as administrative and staff space, pretty much still need to be considered for functionality and comfort. So when you, and then for one instance, a doctor sent me a floor plan for a roughly 1,000 square feet space. If it's a rectangular space, it could be doable. But 1,000 square feet for three treatment rooms, there's going to be a lot of compromise. Okay. What make it worse is it was a odd shape space with interior columns that virtually make it impossible. Not virtually. It's impossible. Okay, and I don't use that word very often. And the only recommendation that I can offer is find someplace else. And I hope that she's listening and take that to heart and actually abandon that particular location and look for something else. Because when you look at a 1,000 square foot space and you want to have a public restroom, a private restroom for yourself, a dedicated restroom for your staff, and still have a large a sizable waiting room, administrative space that also provide private office for the office manager, a consultation office, and so on and so on. As you can see, when you start to add the amount of amenity, you're going to find that 1,000 square feet is pretty much not going to happen. Okay. So the discussion was interesting. Is that it appears that a game plan for that had not been put together, a shopping list of space that they need to have, want to have, or like to have, have not been defined. But the rule of thumb of square footage per operatory was applied rather, literally. It would just simply be very difficult. Again, every space, regardless how big it is, need to be looked at, assessed, so that the limitations, how the space can be laid out so that you can maximize its usage, acquire the circulation that are efficient, the relationship between each of the work area is in its proper place and things like that. So it's not a one size fit all. It has to be done on a case by case. So that it can be all the solutions, all the problem, and all that can be figured out up front. Okay, so it was an interesting topic, Jim. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of times that the rule of thumb is somewhat it's supposed to give them an idea. It was not supposed to be something that's carved in stone. We talk about. I'm not sure what is the actual terminology when we deal with money, but if you are building, five unit apartment, and it costs you $200,000 per unit, but if you and it need an elevator, and that elevator is $100,000, so for each unit, it's going to cost you $20,000, to have that elevator. But if you build 10 units and then they spread the cost, then each unit is responsible for $10,000 instead of $20,000. Okay, so the principle is that the smaller the space, with the smaller count of operatory, naturally that each operatory will cost more to build, and or it require more to have, similar to a bigger facility. That makes sense?
Makes sense. I think you're talking about what's called return on investment. But I guess the question that I would ask is, was this predicated upon having a situation where they were like in a large metropolitan area where they couldn't get large space? Or was this need for 1,000 square foot being based upon a smaller initial investment to get the space? Where was that coming from?
Actually, it was yes and no. One specific was in New York City.
Yeah, so you have real estate, small yeah. spaces, yeah.
Yeah, so where real estate is very expensive, okay? And even that, though, still, you know, you don't just look at strictly, I got 1,000 square feet, okay? You mm-hmm. have to have 1,000 usable square feet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you can't take the premise of like a studio apartment where a room has two functions. It actually is your living room, and then when you pull down your Murphy bed, it's your bedroom. Unfortunately, dental offices don't work that way. You can't turn an operatory into a lobby, and you can't turn an operatory into a sterilization. It is an operatory and will always be an operatory. I guess the only thing that you could maybe double up on is you can maybe do away with a consult room and do all that actually there at the chair in each one of the operatories, but at the same time that, you know, that takes time and takes time away from that production of that particular operatory. So to be able to produce at a higher level in the, you know, $25,000 to $30,000 range of that operatory, it just puts more pressure on it. But understandably,
yeah.
if you're in New York City and you're trying to afford a practice, and the only thing available is 1,000 square foot, well, you might only have a 2-hour practice.
Yeah, and I mean. Mainly, I think, you know, the takeaway, or should I say the pearls that we can offer is this. When an individual comes and say, I have 1,000 square feet in a commercial building or medical office building, or even in a retail facility can be broken down into a number of categories, okay? But the main thing is you have 1,000 square feet. If it's standalone and you don't have common toilet room that the tenant mm-hmm. can use, then you will need to provide it in your space. So suddenly, your 1,000 square feet, you will have to carve out about, you know, roughly 50 square feet for a, you know, for an ADA compliant toilet room. Okay.
Right.
If you are an individual that say, hey, I absolutely will not use public restroom, I got to have my own toilet room. Again, you may be required to dedicate another 50 square feet for your own private ADA-compliant restroom. Okay, some municipality would not mandate that to be ADA-compliant because it's private use. But we run into a municipality where they say, I don't care. If the dentist becomes, you know, wheelchair-bound or handicapped, that restroom have to be able to accommodate you, okay? And you say, hey, if I become handicapped, I'm not going to practice. They say that's irrelevant, okay? So they'll force you. You have to define what it is that you absolutely must have to provide the clinical requirement to have that practice. It all depends on how you practice and stuff like that. And an idea that was brought to me was, you know, when you go into like CVS, Walgreens, or even Walmart, they have those walk-in clinics. You just walk up to the screen, punch in, and say, I'm here. You check in. and you're not talking to anybody live until they're ready for you, and they bring you back into, you know, and check you out. I go, well, maybe future dentist office will move into that direction where you don't have a live human being to greet you when you come into the door. I never say things will never happen because things may happen. You look at maybe that tight spot in that heavily expensive real estate with heavy population like in New York City. You have to be creative in how you can provide the service that are on a somewhat of a personal level, but let technology take care of you. I know that recently my credit union went to a virtual teller. Okay, so there's no longer a teller counter you walk up to and say, hi, I'd like to make this deposit. You walk up, it looks like an ATM machine. You hit the button and the teller come up and greet you and ask you, and they do all the business there. So you're dealing with a live person in on a screen remote someplace else. Okay, so our technologies, our world is becoming more and more technology driven. In the dental industry, it may not be yet. Okay, but again, you have to, if you're going to work with a tight space, you have to look at and decide early on what you must have. Now, we have done practice, we have done design for doctors that shut down the office at lunch. Everybody leave. Okay, so the necessity for a lunchroom where everybody congregate and huddle and all that stuff doesn't exist. Okay, and now I have also have a few of the dentists on Dentaltown that actually share that their staff will go out into the car and eat because they don't have a break room. Okay, you have to decide what it is that you must have, want to have, and things like that, and be flexible in your need, and things like that. So it can work. 1,000 square feet can still work, but you have to decide, do you want your own toilet room or can you share? All right, do you want to have a break room or can you do something else? So there's a lot of give and take, more give than take when you work with smaller space.
Yeah, without a doubt. If you're going to maximize the money-making aspect of your practice, which obviously is the operatory, along with staff necessary to man that. Well, that was definitely an interesting one. Let's jump into today's topic, which obviously we talked about before, is what to know before doing a startup practice. Starting a dental practice can be a very scary thing. And if you do it right, can lead to exceptional success. And if you do it wrong, can definitely lead to failure. You have to properly plan. And we're always a strong advocate of utilizing the correct team. Go back to one of our first episodes that talks about a podcast having to do with team building. There's a specific core team that you need to have as part of your decision-making processes when you start. Obviously, you've come to the realization. You could be a dentist who's working in an associateship right now. You feel that you want to jump out on your own and start your own practice. You could be someone that could be 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 years out of school, and you decided that it's time that I want to start my own practice. You could be in a current partnership that you want to break up and start your own practice. There could be the whole multitude of different levels of where you're currently at, but it all comes down to the same kind of things that you have to do. You have to develop that plan. And the only real way to develop that plan is to make sure you have that core team. And obviously your core team, to reiterate that, really is the design professional, is the I'm doing this from memory until I look it up here. No. Why don't I have it in front of me? Oh, well.
Your
Go ahead, Han. Yeah, you have the accountant, your bank and lender. You have your attorney, and you have your dental equipment specialist that you may or may not be currently working with, or someone that you're going to bring in new. And then, as it develops further, then you would have your construction partner, or at least advisor at that point, along with, you know, your design professional being, you know, the architect or designer in regards to what you can or can't do. But you have to take the advice of that core team as you develop this plan. Now, what is the developing of the plan actually going to do? Well, it's going to do a lot of things, but mostly it's going to identify few key areas. First of all, how much can you afford to spend on what you want to try to build? You could be building something, you could be leasing something, you could be buying something that you're going to renovate. So there's a cost component. What is that cost component going to be made of? It's going to be made up of a couple of things. It's going to be made up of what the improvement costs are going to be. It's going to be made up of the soft costs. Go back and listen to one of our podcasts to talk about the cost of doing a design. Soft costs are things like fees and such. And then it's going to be made up of equipment costs. What's it going to be necessary to equip that particular practice? And then, of course, to have some money to start up the actual business itself and get it going and keep it going for a period of time until actually revenue and funds start coming in from the practice. I believe Bill mentioned when we had him on as a guest host about how when he started up his first practice, basically did everything on credit cards, opened the doors in the practice, and hoped and pray that people came in. And that's how
it was.
Started.
Very religious.
Very religious. Because, exactly. Because that's a difficult time when you've got to make those credit card payments that you've spent all that money on, and you're hoping that the patients come in. The other part about your startup practice is you have to have a marketing plan. You have to develop that and have that ready to go so that you can get the word out, that you can get those patients, you can bring those patients if you're starting a new practice. If you have an existing practice or an existing client base that maybe you have a partnership and you're breaking the partnership up, and okay, so you have a book of patients you're going to take with you, and there and your previous partner may take a book of patients with him or her, and at least you have something to start with. But you have to have a marketing plan to start these things up. Now, the other thing is, where are you going to locate this practice? We can tell you horror stories on some of the things that were asked and some of the questions that are raised to us as to, you know, is this a good location or is this not a good location? But you definitely need to do your homework and let your team give you advice on where you should locate your particular practice. Let's say you've defined it that you want to be within a certain city or a certain state. That's great. Then you can define that even further. What's the adjacent competition like? Are you trying to go into an area that's super saturated with dentists already? Maybe not the best idea. Maybe look for a more lucrative opportunity. Maybe identify where there might be some locations where the public is underserved, and you have the opportunity to come in and open something that could then realize some substantial growth. Or, you know, are you going to be a specialist? Are you going to be a pedo? Are you going to deal with orthodontics? Are you going to deal with all the specialties that are out there? Is that what you're trying to open and move forward with? So get the advice of the team. Get those market studies out there to be able to figure out what you can or can't do or where you should or shouldn't be located. Go back to one of our previous podcasts and we talk about the location. Locations is critical when you, let's say you would define that the geographic city that you want to be in, it's a place you want to live. There's thousands of possible locations within that city. Which one is the best? Well, it definitely should be adjacent to where all your patients go. The grocery store, the bank, the gas station. Where does the wife of the family go? Because studies have been determined that the wife of the family unit typically makes the appointments for all the dentistry. That's your key market for that particular growing practice. You need to be able to be where that person is and where they're able to identify you and be able to then take advantage of that. Talk about site selection. Site selection is crucial because let's say you've got two adjacent sites or two properties, one on one side of town, one on the other side of town. How do you evaluate those things and some of the things that we've run into?
Again, I think site selection should be done, like Jim says, that, if all of your, if you've done the demographics and the number is right, patient to dentist ratio is good and all that. Now you have, the site that are within those parameter. Let me see, you heard the expression location, location, location. Okay, and I think it's a positive thing. However, location should also be looked at with some scrutiny. For instance, you can pick you definitely want to have visibility, okay? But next after visibility, it should have good access, good potential growth. Good parking, and all those things, and not just buying a location because it's cheap. In other words, some of the biggest challenge that deal with a location is the lack of parking. Huge issue. Of course, if you are located in downtown, USA, parking is a primary is a common denominator in terms of lack of. When you get into the downtown district, it's a pain in the butt to look for parking space. So if you're lucky, you find a location that have on-site parking and stuff like that, but people that live in the metropolis understand that. They, some of them take public transportation, whether it's Uber, the bus, the train, whatever. We're not talking about those locations. Okay, we're talking about middle America, where you have shopping centers that you drive to, dentist office that you drive to, and things like that. Often, when we look at site, of course, how big is the site you need? That is one question. The better question is how much of that site can you use? Okay, you can buy 10 acres of land and only have 0.10%, a tenth of an acre to use, that's a bad purchase. Okay? That may be a little exaggeration, but it happens. We have worked with sites that are purchased, on the dentist purchase it without having a team put together and bounce the idea off of them to get their feedback. So if the site was cheap, but it has no parking, and then now you have to create, try to solve that. Luckily, that particular incident that we worked with, it worked out. Recently, we have when people reach out to us or people on downtown that post. Their building, and one of the questions that I usually ask is, what the heck does the site look like? Have somebody work out the a site design where this building is going to be located so that we can see where's the back door, where's the front door, where's parking and all that stuff. Because you cannot design a building as an island alone and then try to fit it someplace else. Okay, so it's important. We recently have, individuals come to us and they go, I'm looking to do a practice this big and that big and so on and so on. And I say, well, where is the location? Where's the, do you have any information pertaining to the site? That way it can be designed appropriately, or it's almost like having a tailor suit made for you. They need your size, all right? So a site, even if in this particular site that we were just presented to was a tad more than an acre for a building less than 4,000 square feet. That is a lot of land. That should be great. Ideally, in the ideal world, perfect. It's one site or one lot from the intersection. That's great. That's great visibility and all that. The challenge is in the east and west and north and south direction, there is a median that you can't cross, a divider. So to get to it, you have to make U-turns. Okay. Every time that your patient have to make a turn or a zig or a zag in the road to get to you, that's one obstacle they have to overcome. It's a deduction in points. Okay. And in this particular case, it's adjacent to a franchise, a very well-known franchise facility. So it's a name recognition that you can call, hey, I'm next to the post office type of thing. So it's a good thing. But when we look at the site, there is no way to get to it from the back of the property. So you have to go literally, you have to go west, make a U-E, go east to get into the property. All right, so if you're coming from the north and south, you can't get to it except go west first. So it limits access to the site. That is a minus. Okay.
Moral of the story is we recommended to our client to find another location.
Yes. Because without a doubt. There's no visibility, there's limited access. And then on top of that, I can only use almost like 40% of the property, and there was not enough land to get them the parking that they require. So, yes, ultimately, you should have your team look at it, assess it, make the recommendation, take their recommendation, and then make the decision that's best for you. If they say run, do run.
Exactly.
Okay, hopefully
well,
your team
– yeah. On with that, I believe we have Dr. Sarah that has now been able to join us. I'd like to welcome Doctor. Doctor, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Excellent.
Hi, Dr. Reed.
Hey, Han.
Thank you.
Good evening. Glad that you
Good
can.
Evening.
Glad that you can. Yeah, glad you can join us. I hope you had a great day today. Okay. Can
yeah,
you hear us okay?
You. Yes, I can. Yep.
Okay. Our whole purpose, Jimmy, you okay? Let me just kind of take over, okay?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Our whole purpose of asking Dr. Reeves to join us this evening is so that she can, she just started a startup. She is a Peter Donis, just kind of share her story, share her experience, from when she decided to start her practice, and the good, the bad, the ugly, and all that in that process. And Doc, could you share with us where you are in your career when you make the decision and what you did prior to starting your practice to prepare yourself to getting things, you know, in proper place so that you can make that happen.
Sure. So I graduated dental school in 2013. I graduated from Detroit Mercy, and I went into residency right outside of school with no work experience. So I went straight into residency, graduated residency in 2015, and it was always in the back of my mind that at some point in my career I wanted to have a startup practice. I just didn't know when the correct time would be. So I started off working. I was in Cleveland for a little bit, and then I worked for an office in Cleveland, and then I met my husband. We moved to Milwaukee, and I worked there for a little bit, and then I came to Ohio, that's where my office is at. It's a suburb of Toledo, and I worked a little bit around this area as well. And, you know, we had just moved to the area. I was looking for jobs, and I wasn't having any luck. And my husband knew that this was something I always wanted to accomplish. And we didn't have any kids, and he was just starting up. We knew that we wanted to settle down in this area. So he said, you know, let's go for it. Let's pull the trigger. And then that's kind of where I, you know, came to start the practice. I mean, it was always something that I wanted to accomplish. It was just, I was waiting for the right time, and he kind of nudged me, into starting, and then to prepare, I was looking at different areas. I find an area where there was no pediatric dentist. I did some demographic reports. We came to visit the area several times. And I was actually, I don't know if you remember, hon, but we were debating between two cities, one in Michigan, close to the Ohio border, and then here in Perrysburg.
Right.
And ultimately, we decided to settle down in the Ohio area.
I'm glad that you stick with Ohio.
Because, yeah, the demographic reports were just so much stronger for this area than they were in that city in Michigan. So that's why we stuck around here. So that's kind of how I came to starting the practice and, you know, working in different offices. So I think it's really important to, before you decide to do a startup or before, you know, what really helped me was working in several offices before I started up. So I worked in 5 different offices before I started up my own office. And that kind of allowed me to see what I liked from different places, what I didn't like, you know, what kinds of insurances I wanted to accept, what kinds I didn't. And it really laid the foundation to what I was looking for. And I was able to, with the help of HJT, to really put all of that and start up my own office. So and we spend a lot of time talking too.
Yeah, because I like to talk. So that's why.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you take courses and you know, and seminars and stuff like that to prepare yourself in terms of what, you know, what the design process or how to set up the practice, the office and things like that?
Yeah, so before I decided to do the startup, I did a ton of reading. So I was on Dental Town, you know, just reading all different sorts of posts about where to start and what to do. And a lot of people recommended certain courses. And I did take those courses, and I took some of those principles that I got from the courses and applied them to my office. But I did. I took my husband out to a course in Texas, and we took that course together and then applied some of the principles from it. But I did a ton of reading on mostly Dental Town at the time. Now there's a lot more different, there's a lot of different venues to get your information. But at the time it was mostly Dental Town. So I was just reading post after post after post to see what people, you know, mistakes that people have done and what they recommend doing, what they don't recommend doing, companies they recommended and whatnot.
Yeah, it's, you know, one of the things that, about working with you in particular, that you were very flexible in reviewing and deciding on the recommendation, things like that. You know, we run into clients that take courses and it's verbatim. They want everything exactly like they've seen it at those courses, and you know, there's no bend or anything like that. So they kind of basically might as well take a Xerox machine out and say, "I want just that." And you are quite flexible to allow, you know, the space to work, the recommendation and the adjustments necessary so that those ideas that you felt are worthwhile to have can be implemented. So that, I think that's a part of the important thing of being not just the client or the business owner, but being part of the team that you know, that can guide and make things more successful. Okay.
And I think a big part of that too was that I kind of understood that I didn't, like, when I came to you, I knew that you were the expert in that field and I was not. And what might work in, you know, some other state for another dentist is not going to work where I am or for my patient base or for what I am trying to accomplish. So I think a big part of that was understanding, whether it be, you know, with the demographic reports, whether it be with talking with you or, you know, talking to some of the equipment experts or whatever it is that, you know, you research and you read, but ultimately, you know, that everybody has a purpose and everybody knows or experts in that field. And you have to be willing to accept that kind of advice to really, I feel like, be successful in any aspect of life, but certainly with a startup.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, that's a good philosophy and understanding to have. Is that, you know, like your new patient come into the office and they tell you how to do your job. You know, it's a little humorous to think about that, but often if you hire a professional, you have to have some trust and faith in their ability and at least hear what they have to recommend, and then you decide what's best for you, and that worked out very well. Okay. Jim, were you going to say something, Jim?
I was just going to say, Doctor, could you share with the listeners your experience on the site selection? Because I know that we work together quite a lot on that, and I think that would be very helpful and interesting for them to hear what you had to go through to get to your, I think, beautiful location.
Yeah, so I started off kind of pinpointing the cities that I was also very flexible with where I was willing to do the startup. So I started off kind of picking out the cities that I wanted to live in or be close to, or that were within a driving range of where we wanted to live. So that's kind of where we started. And then I would start looking at where the other pediatric offices were. And wherever there was a large group or a large practice, I tried to stay away from that because I didn't want to set myself up, not necessarily to fail, but to make it more difficult for me to attract patients. So I kind of crossed those off my list. And then I ran a demographic report. I narrowed it down to two places, and I ran a demographic report for both cities. I guess what I was looking for more when I was doing my startup was more of like a suburban, growing city, lots of kids. And it seemed like from the demographic report that the city in Ohio, Perrysburg, seemed to offer that more so than the city I was looking at in Michigan. So that's kind of how I narrowed it down to the Ohio address. And then I started looking at sites. So I had... Gosh, I was like on LoopNet for so long trying to see, new properties that are coming in. And what we did was we kind of went from site to site. So one of the courses or one of the things that I had read at some point was it's good to be close to a supermarket. I probably saw that on Dentaltown. So I found a site that was close to a supermarket. But this is kind of where that like flexibility came in, because it was close to the supermarket, but it wasn't visible at all from the road. And you can only see it if you're going to that supermarket and you look a certain way, you'll be able to see that office. And I don't know if you remember, Jim, which one I was talking about.
Oh, I remember it.
Yeah. So, and but I was, you know, I just read about it, and everybody was saying you have to be close to a supermarket. And I might have heard it on a podcast. I don't know where I heard it. And then we, you know, I think Jim, you were the one who kind of pointed that out to me, that you couldn't really see it from the main road. And then I was looking at a couple of other sites, and visibility was, I guess, what I was looking at. That would be the most important factor that helped me come out with the location that I'm at right now. And then just reading about the community, they're building new schools. It's an up-and-coming area. There was a lot of new houses being built in the area. So that's kind of what led me to the location I was at right now.
Yeah, I remember that, especially that particular location. You know, we always advocate being close to the grocery store, the supermarket, the gas station, the bank, all the places where your client is going to be, so they can see you. But at the same time, the location that was just around the corner that had super visibility, right at a major intersection. It was just a little bit behind, but it wasn't directly adjacent to the supermarket, but it was at probably one of the highest traffic areas along that corridor. And once we identified that one, I felt very strongly that it was a super location. And I think ultimately it did, in fact, was the right choice, because I know you looked at several other locations where there were some on another corridor where some people were looking to build some new locations. One was across from a Costco, which is not a bad location.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
If I remember right,
the parking.
I think that was a parking issue, and also an exorbitant cost. I think that was way up there in the way of a cost. You ended up getting a leasing a retail space that we since have renovated and converted into your practice. So you didn't build something new.
Yeah.
You're actually leasing, and you have a 10-year lease in that particular location.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Mom.
Yeah. What's unique about this location, and I think it's a plus, is that when you go into a retail facility, you often have only one front that you look at. That's, you know, you have the front door. That's where you have your sign. If you're on an end cap, you may have the front and ugly side, and then the ugly back of the building. In your case, you have three facades that are very visible, so that's a good plus. And it have a lot of glass and stuff like that, so that's a great thing. But before you come to us, I would assume that you've done a fair amount of research on who to use, who's best to use, you know, and trying to identify what would be the right fit for you. And I'm sure that there is a lot of, there's a lot of options that you can choose. But could you share, what was the, what is some of the factor that allowed you to decide to go and use an architect instead of go and use a builder who will use an architect to help you on a project, and or even go through the supply company that leads you to various other, design professional and contractor and so on.
Mm-hmm. So I started off kind of just with the Google search and, looking at different contractors, and I did contact a couple of contractors initially, and they had told me, well, you have to find an architect. And I contacted some of the dental supply companies, but I felt like, although they may say it's not, but it's always in their best interest to be able to draw up a plan for you where you would need the most equipment. And it didn't, a lot of their plans, whatever it was, and this was also something that I had read prior to, reaching out, but a lot of it was, it didn't make sense for me functionally. And so I did speak with supply companies, and I did, and then I decided I just needed a consultant, because I thought it was worth the money to spend
getting a professional again, because this would be my first time, and I knew what I wanted, but there was a lot of things that, Han, in the future you pointed out, and now I look back and I'm like, my goodness, like, this was such a great idea that I would have never thought about. And I don't think that somebody who doesn't do this on a regular basis, or someone who had different kinds of interests, you know, is not, you're not their best interest, but something else may be, is going to lead you down the path that you want to be on. So that's what made me decide to look for a consultant. And I had spoken with you, and I spoke with other companies. And one of the things that you said during one of the first conversations was, you told me you like to keep things simple. And you said you use the KISS principle for everything. And that really stuck with me, because that's what I was looking for. And that's what, I guess, just speaking with you, you took the time to really speak to me. You went into a lot of detail, and then I got to meet Jim. And I was comfortable. And I felt that, you know, this was a company or a group of people that I could really trust. And that's why I decided to go down the route that I did. And looking back, I don't think I could have ever done this on my own. I don't think, you know, just me working with the contractor directly, I don't know if I would have been able to handle that. It just would have been so much stress that I think was more than worth it to hand off to someone else who's more of an expert than I would be.
By the way, for the layman, for most folks, what the KISS principle the KISS stands for, keep it simple, stupid. You know, some people might go, oh, that's pretty harsh. And I say, so, okay, I'm a nice guy. Keep it simple, sweetheart. Okay? I was, when I was in college, my professor taught me that principle in front of my classmates. And I learned that the hard way. Okay? So, in terms of equipment, okay, I know that the debate has always been, especially when you're starting out young, you're out of school for a few years, you know, you had student debts, you may have a young family and all that stuff. In your case, you don't have a young family to worry about, but nevertheless, student debts. And so when you want to start your own practice, you go, okay, do I want to go and buy the top of the line equipment? And you know, or can I go with refurbish and stuff like that? Kind of walk us through your decision and what have you decided if you're gonna do over and pertain to equipment.
Sure. So I started off. So I spoke with some equipment suppliers, and then I got on Dental Town and I started reading. And I feel like now I take things more with a grain of salt, but I started reading, and everyone was like, just buy your equipment refurbished. It'll save you a ton of money. And obviously, you know, as a startup, you're starting from nothing. I already had student debt, and I didn't want to dig myself into a hole, you know, not knowing what the future would hold. So I decided to buy my equipment refurbished. Almost all of my equipment is refurbished. And I think that was my biggest nightmare throughout this whole process. And I don't think if I were to ever do this again that I would go that route. Yes, there are some things that I would, you know, like the dental chairs or, you know, a couple of items here and there that you can buy refurbished and try and save some money on. But having somebody, and again, that goes back to the fact that you need an expert in every aspect of what you're doing, because they know more than you'll ever know about that certain topic. So with the equipment, I felt, you know, I was lucky to have Han and Jim and that whole team helping me out. But it took a lot of stress, a lot of, you know, I don't know if this is going to work, and trying to find out from the manufacturer, and nobody really wants to support you if you're buying used equipment. So I think going back, that would be one of the things that I would change, is that I would work with a supplier of some sort, and, you know, maybe not buy everything brand new, but buy the majority of the items that, you know, with the what is it? What am I trying to think of, hon?
The warranties and technical supports?
Yeah, like the, no, not just the type, but like anything that has like the piping, the tubing,
the spec sheets and the templates.
Yes. Yep. I would just buy that brand new. It's just not worth the hassle of going the refurbished route.
I've learned a lot from that, from this experience too. So that when you buy, again, when you buy refurbished and you basically hit it on a nail, is that a lot of time the warranty is not there anymore. The technicals, the product may have been out of out of production. If you need anything at all, the refurbished people are mainly, they can paint it, they can replace the parts, but they may not be an expert in the in dealing with these, with the nuts and bolts of how that get put together. So it add a layer of extra effort, extra time, extra work, extra gray hair to get it done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So,
and then you're paying from all sorts of different people, and it's just trying to get everyone to coordinate together. It just was a hassle. I wouldn't recommend it.
It was fun, if I can say that. All right. but I'm kind of sick. Okay. All right. So anyway, of course. Hindsight is always 20/20. Okay,
yeah.
And you mentioned that in your next building or next project, you're going to have equipment people on board so that they can put their 2 cents in there. Is there anything else that you would like to share with your colleagues who's nipping at the bit to start their own practice, things that would help them, things that make their life a little easier, because they say that other people's experience is the best teacher, okay? Not your own, okay? So it's all yours. Please share.
I mean, the biggest piece of advice I have for people is reach out to others who have done something similar and get their advice. I did a lot of talking with Dr. Hunsinger. I did a lot of talking with you, Han, and we had talked hours before we had even come up with a plan to kind of see which direction we wanted to go in. But do your research, do your reading. It's a bumpy ride, but everybody is out there to help you. And rarely will you come across anyone who doesn't want to share information with you or doesn't want to reach out and help you out in some way. And I think that is, probably the most important thing that I found when I was doing the startup, is just reaching out to others and getting information and reading online, whether it be, now there's these podcasts or the Facebook groups or Dental Town or whatever it is, people are there to help. And then also having a support system. I don't think I could have done any of this without HJT or, just even at home without my husband to kind of be there and talk to. And so just make sure you have a strong support system and the right people to talk to when, things go south, to kind of calm your nerves a little bit. Because, and be ready that, things aren't going to go the way. I mean, our construction got delayed. I thought I was going to open way before we actually did open. So just be ready for changes and, accept that not everything is going to go the way things are planned, and you just have to be open to that.
One of the mantras that we have on this, on our program, is that the only dumb question is the one you don't ask.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We often encourage that you ask. Ask, the question may sound silly, but if you need an answer, ask. Okay?
Absolutely.
It's been a great ride, Cheryl. I enjoy working with you. I You know, I'm glad that things is going well. You know, like you say, is that there is not a perfect project. As long as you are willing to and flexible enough to change, to zig when you need to zag when you need to. It requires a little bit of patience. You stick to with the program and things will eventually get to where it need to be, because you don't have, none of us have total control of the project, none. Okay.
Yeah.
We can only work the best that we can, and then when you open the door and welcome your first patient, you say, that was fun. Glad that we did that, because we learned so much from it. And you got a lot of your question answer and things like that. Okay. Jim, do you have anything that you want to add or ask or talk?
Well, actually, I just, again, want to thank Dr. Sarah for joining us and sharing her insight to our listeners, because just as she said, ask a lot of questions and there's a lot of information out there. Well, now the next group that were in her shoes get to listen to what she has said, and we'll be able to take advantage of that. And again, thank you for putting your trust in us. Every day we are thankful for the opportunities to do that and help people like yourself. And we're always here for any questions that you're going to have from now until the future. But again, thank you for the opportunity to be able to work together. It was fun. It
thank
is
you.
Fun, and we're not going to be strangers. We're always here. We like to talk, don't we, Han?
Yes, you do. Hey, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Have you completed your website? Okay,
yeah.
Some dentists do a tour of their office. Okay, I have not looked at your site for probably a month.
Coming soon.
Okay, all right. So when you're done, when you're done, I'd like to at least offer that to the viewing public so they can take a look at what
Absolutely.
A wonderful job that you've done with your office, okay?
Well, and what you've done, planning it and putting it all together, and it wasn't all me. So, but yeah.
Hey, I'm just a humble servant. Well, I'm glad that you invite me to the table, okay?
Yeah.
Listen,
I definitely
appreciate you. You take the time out for us, and we will talk to you again very soon. All right. Thanks
Sounds
again.
Good. Take care. Thank you.
Take care. All right. Bye-bye.
Okay.
I look like we are at the end. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, we are. And, obviously, if anyone would like to ask any questions of Han or myself, get a hold of us at www.hjtdesign.com. You can also get all the podcasts for all the previous episodes and listen to those. We're here to answer any and all questions and basically to help out. But we've enjoyed this time together. Please remember that our next show is going to be on the 11th. Han is in the process of pulling together a very special guest for that show. I'm going to leave it at that. They call that a cliffhanger, don't they, Han?
Or a nail biter, yeah.
Yeah, or a nail biter. But it hopefully be a individual that you will be able to gather a whole bunch of knowledge from in our next show that will be on the 11th, and then one after that will be on the 18th. So with that, folks, we'd like to say good evening, and thank you so much for listening and letting us be part of your evening experience. Han?
I'm glad. I hope that you... that Dr. Sarah was able to share for some of her experience that could help you with your journey as you contemplate and start your own practice. I appreciate you giving us your time and tuning in and listening to us. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.